What are the biggest challenges that you're facing right now as a pediatric practice, as you lead the group and work with your physicians? What's going on in the world of peds?
So peds is all about immunizations. When I first met you and I was trying to teach you about pediatrics, I'm like, just don't mess around with our immunizations and you'll be okay. So we're in a time right now, it feels a little bit like the Andrew Wakefield MMR causes autism times, where vaccines are coming, you know, once again into question. I think we lost a lot of trust during COVID, the entire medical community and, you know, the establishment, the CDC, the FDA, all of those pieces lost trust, and vaccines become part of that.
This episode of Vital Conversations is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin.
Hi, my name's Tim Cohen, and welcome to Vital Conversations, presented by Focus Solutions. Here we talk to healthcare leaders about what's going on in their little corner of our industry. And I'm really excited to have a longtime friend, longtime colleague, and one of the best physician executives I've ever met with us, Dr. Carrie Feierstein. Carrie, welcome to Vital Conversations.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for the lovely introduction. The way I usually introduce myself is Chief Executive Officer of Allied Physicians Group and Adjuvant on Health, pediatrician for over 35 years, mother of three, and now grandmother of three.
Awesome. We could actually talk about a whole bunch of those. Probably have more fun with the grandma side. I want to focus on the pediatrician, particularly pediatrician as a CEO. But for context, give people a little sense of Allied, who you guys are, where you are on Long Island, not in Long Island, as I learned over the years. Tell us a little bit about Allied and Adjuvant first, and then we're going to dive into pediatrics.
So Allied is considered a practice without walls, and we may have started on Long Island, but we've expanded to pretty much the five boroughs, Westchester, and we go a little bit over the Tappan Zee Bridge to what we call upstate, and the upstate people laugh at when we say is upstate. So it's into Orange County.
How many providers locations at Allied?
37 locations, 150 pediatricians and APPs.
Wow. And from the markets you serve, you're right in Metro New York all the way to some pretty actually remote and relatively rural areas and parts of Long Island. So you really see lots of diversity across the practice.
Yeah, we have some high Medicaid practices, a lot of commercial, a lot of state employees, right? The policemen, the teachers, all the people that we love to take care of.
Awesome. Like I said, we could talk about a lot about the leadership challenges that go with running a group that big, but I actually want to talk pediatrics today. You know, for the vast majority of us, all apologies to the OB that might have delivered us. The first doctor that we were ever consciously aware of was our pediatrician. So you guys have been taking care of us for a long, long time before you pass us on to adulthood. What are the biggest challenges that you're facing right now as a pediatric practice, as you lead the group and work with your physicians? What's going on in the world of peds?
So peds is all about immunizations. When I first met you and I was trying to teach you about pediatrics, I'm like, right, just don't mess around with our immunizations and you'll be okay.
Right.
So we're in a time right now, it feels a little bit like the Andrew Wakefield MMR causes autism times, where vaccines are coming, you know, once again into question. I think we lost a lot of trust during COVID, the entire medical community and, you know, the establishment, the CDC, the FDA, all of those pieces lost trust, and vaccines become part of that.
Could you have ever imagined, you know, particularly with the current, you know, secretary and the dialogue, maybe there's some goods and bads. I mean, on one hand, more people are tuned into this subject maybe than ever before. That could be a positive. On the other hand, I'm guessing your physicians would say, there might be a lot of noise that they're trying to wade through in that conversation with a set of parents. Who would have guessed vaccines and immunizations would have risen to the top of the broad national conversation? How are you guys managing all that?
Our patients, for the most part, trust us.
Okay.
You know, it's like nobody likes Congress, but everybody likes their congressman. You know, people tend to trust their pediatrician. In the first year of life, you're seeing us, I think, 15 times, even if the child's never sick. So there is that bond that's created, and most of us are willing to listen to parents and hear their concerns. We're not pushing, you know, something that they don't necessarily want or that they're not ready for. For the most part, our parents, especially in my area, are anxious to get all their vaccines. They want to know if they can get their MMR early because they're worried, you know, that they might go into New York City and put their child at risk. But there are definitely pockets and populations where that's not the case. And they're listening to, you know, other people, people on the internet, religious leaders. While there's no religion that does not approve of vaccines, there are certain sects that, you know, seem to be more questioning about them, or at least some of them.
Yeah. Are you finding parents are anxious around this topic because of all the noise, or do they come in pretty clear on where their position is?
I would say they're getting more anxious again, right? Okay. They were for a while, then things became settled, and now they're more anxious because you have this little baby and you're responsible for everything. And there's a million decisions you make every day, from what formula you pick to what crib and, you know, whether you swaddle them. And then vaccines just become one more thing that feels very serious, because it is, right? If you're not giving it, you're putting that child's life at risk. But you want to make sure that you're not doing any harm by giving it from a parent's perspective. You know, there are people telling you, oh, you should space it out, it's too much for the baby. You know, none of which is true, but sounds very plausible.
Right. Right. How about with your providers? It's interesting for when you talk with someone maybe that is not as close and getting to see physicians up close and personal as I have for 35 years, you realize there's also a normal distribution in worldview across the provider set, right? Politically and economically and all sorts of things. Have you had any conversations with any of your providers around this topic that you've had to work through? Or is everybody kind of on the same page?
When it comes to the standard childhood vaccines, we are all on the same page. COVID vaccine, there is definitely a dichotomy of people, often based on political views and things around COVID, right? Whether, you know, we required that people be vaccinated or leave our employment. And there were physicians that said, if somebody had the vaccine, they have immunity. Which we knew from science made sense, right? But the powers that be were not saying that. We couldn't prove immunity. There was no way to really know. So, you know, we went with the standard line at the time. And that was definitely a dichotomy. And whether you give now, are we giving boosters or not? Our offices have them. Most people aren't too interested in them.
It is interesting, your observation about how much trust was lost from authorities, right? The people that we're seeing on television that had MD behind their name, the Centers for Disease Control. But I've long believed that a physician practice in a world with huge hospitals, huge pharma, huge insurance companies has this one unbeatable advantage that you just get face-to-face, person-to-person in the privacy of an exam room. And there's just trust and humanity there. I am guessing that you guys are experiencing that even more as some of the trust has gone down in the institutional experts. But like you said, it's still my doctor that is holding my baby in the exam room.
And this is the doctor that helped me when my child had that really high fever and I was so nervous, they helped me. Or they made the diagnosis of that pneumonia and put them on the antibiotic, and now they're all better. So we have the benefit of having actually done good things. You know, you put the trust pebbles in the bank.
And we talked about the patient side of the equation. Let's flip over to the provider side. You've got a large practice, obviously providers coming and going, you're growing and expanding. What's going on in the world of recruiting, retaining, compensating, motivating pediatricians?
Recruitment is a big concern of ours going forward. Last year, for the first time, the pediatric match didn't fill. We just had the match, so I don't know. I haven't heard if we did better this year in general in pediatrics. Okay. But
is that the classic problem that just not enough physicians are picking primary care in general? Or is there something you think more unique to pediatrics?
Pediatrics remains the lowest paying specialty.
So I think people would be absolutely shocked if they understood what their pediatrician made compared to lots of other people in their life that don't have nearly as much education risk. Critical decision-making related to their family.
100%. You know, having somebody come over to, you know, fix your washing machine or, right, the cost of things like that, or, you know, compared to the hourly cost of a lawyer. We are really bargains. And then we don't get paid for everything we do, right?
I was going to say that whole conversation when somebody's trying to figure out what to do with immunization or to swaddle or not to swaddle. Having grown up in the billing world, I know you don't get to put extra codes on, hey, mom was nervous, so I had to spend a little bit more time making sure she felt heard. You get your 99214 and you get what you get.
They did recognize the extra time for counseling. So for children under 18, as long as they're not Medicaid, because for some reason the United States government did not allow it, you do get a little extra for counseling as long as you give the vaccine. If you don't give the vaccine, you know, then it's harder to get that code for it. You know, if it happens at a different visit, sometimes you can add the time on. Most of the time you can't. Sometimes it's a phone call. And you have that phone call. Sometimes parent wants to discuss something and you say, okay, it really needs to be a visit or a telemedicine, you know, partly because you want to have the time for it so that you're not adding this on at the end of your day. And partly you do want to get paid for what you do.
Yeah. So back to the match. So it's hard to recruit today. And now you're telling me we're at the beginning that the factory will be putting out fewer and fewer pediatricians. What's the retirement cliff look like? Do we have lots of pediatricians approaching the end that are going to create some vacancies that people like you have to fill?
Yeah. I mean, in our practice specifically, the managing physicians, the physicians that owned the practices, that joined us, that started it, are all getting older and wanting to at least work less, even if they're not retiring completely. Yeah. There are the newer physicians, I'm finding a lot of them want to work part-time. Or if they want to work full-time doesn't include the amount of Saturdays and Sundays that we need to cover, because the patients are working too. They want to come in on their off days. You know, my busiest day is, you know, Columbus Day, all the Monday holidays that everybody gets off that we don't take off. Patients love to come in those days. But my younger physicians, they want that time off because their kids are off. You know, then we have NPs and PAs who are not as trained. So they're coming in and they need to be taught. And lots of times we teach them and then they move on someplace else to a hospital where there might be better benefits. Or they can decide, you know what, I think I'd like to do plastics this year or dermatology. They're not constrained in the same way a physician is.
So you're saying not only are the actual, you know, raw numbers of pediatricians that we're producing going down, but those pediatricians might not see as many visits per year because of a part-time thing that we historically thought one full-time pediatrician can cover X patients and Y visits in a year. It's actually worse. How you managing around that problem?
We're just working on recruiting.
Scramble.
We're trying to create a culture where people want to work for us. In some ways, we can't compete with the hospitals necessarily on salary. That was another point as you were talking. It used to be that when I exited my residency, I could either work for a hospital or go out into private practice. Now you could become a hospitalist. You can work in a hospital clinic. You can decide to work for an urgent care center. You can be a telemed person. You could be. There's just also a lot of competition for that same group of physicians, which makes it harder.
So one of the topics you mentioned, this will be a little more business than clinical, and because I know about Allied, very, very physician-led. You guys have physician leaders overseeing every function of the business along with the civilian management team. So those managing partners that own their practices that originally came together to form Allied, as they transition out, younger physicians, how are you finding their interest on the business side of their practice, all that extra work of sitting on a committee or attending some meetings, either inside the practice or with the hospital? What's the generational difference, if there is one, between how physicians think about that side of their time?
I think the people that we're hiring as employed physicians aren't thinking of how do I run a practice? How do I keep it going? They just want to go to work and go home. And even with that, there's a lot of pajama time with the EMR and people being able to portal message you at any time, you know, day or night kind of thing. So it is a little bit of a problem. And we're finding people, we're nurturing them. I think, you know, you need to get people, you know, maybe not right out of school, but, you know, when their kids are a little bit settled, they have more time, they're willing to look at spending more time that way.
Carrie, last question. Because you wear both hats, you both see patients as a practicing pediatrician and you are the CEO of a large organization. How have those two roles informed one another over the years that you've been sitting in both chairs at the same time? How are you a different CEO because you're a pediatrician? And how are you a different pediatrician because you're also a CEO?
Well, I'm definitely a better CEO having not only practiced, but continuing to practice. Because any of the things that I'm implementing, I'm going to have to live with also. And, you know, even beyond that, sometimes there's just unintended consequence. You don't realize it. Or somebody thinks something is working a certain way. And I'm actually there. I'm like, this isn't really working the way that we thought, or something that we wouldn't even think about. And as I'm doing it, I'm like, wow, if I made this mistake, I'm sure other people are making this mistake. Right. We probably need to clarify that a little bit.
Okay.
And then what being a good pediatrician is, right? I think part of it is I understand the finances of it, not only for me, but for the patient to some degree. So I'm able to figure out, you know, how to work around certain things when it comes to billing and getting pharmacy things covered, or I know how to at least navigate the system to, you know, get the patient what they need or help my staff get the patient what they need.
Carrie, thanks for sharing. There's no way I'm going to end this without talking just for 30 seconds about one of my favorite parts of Allied, which is the Allied Foundation that the physicians have committed lots of time and energy and money toward. Give people just 15 seconds on some of the things that the foundation has done, because it's actually the coolest part of your entire practice.
So the foundation is a 501(c) that was set up, and we kind of fell into being a diaper bank. So we are, I think, the only diaper bank on Long Island. And the woman who's in charge of it is amazing. And she's made connections all over, not only Long Island, but New York and across the country. Baby to Baby, which is the California, it's a lot of movie stars and celebrities that have come together during COVID when they couldn't get diapers, they started making them. I mean, we get pallets and pallets of diapers. I think we're well over 3 million diapers that we've given out.
We've
started period supply, so we do that. We have a milk bank. Allied has integrated breastfeeding. We have one of the, Dr. Lauren Macaluso, one of the leading breastfeeding medicine doctors in the country. And we have four different milk bank sites where people can drop off milk and then it gets delivered to, you know, the larger milk bank. We do Reach Out and Read, which is a reading program for children where we are given books for them. Or the foundation will buy books if we don't have enough. And every child, when they come for every checkup, gets a book. And the idea is that their parent is supposed to sit and read with them, because we know if you create that bond and that love of reading, that child does so much better.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing. Yeah, most of us probably don't realize that if things are really tight, diapers are really expensive. $3 million is an incredible number. Again, Dr. Carrie Fierstein, thank you so much for being our guest today and just taking us a little bit into the world of pediatrics.
Thank you, Tim. It was so nice to chat.
Vital Conversations is presented by Focus Solutions. Focus provides integrated IT data and software services to physician practices all across the United States. To hear more stories about physician practice leaders and what they are doing, subscribe to Vital Conversations wherever you get your podcast.